scale on page 309 is the piece that I'm going to be discussing. Paisley Rusdale was born in 1970 in Seattle, Washington, and studied at the University of Washington and Trinity College in Dublin. Her work has been recognized, among other things, by a Village Voice Writers on the Verge Award, a Fulbright Fellowship in South Korea, and the Lawrence Goldstein Poetry Prize from the Michigan Quarterly Review. I read an interview with her in the Richmond Review, where she talked about the paradoxes of race and appearance. She's half Chinese and half European, and she's done a lot of work discussing the paradoxes of race and appearance. And if you stretch this metaphor a bit, I thought applied really nicely to our work as writers, attempting to work between the lines of form and structure and function. So to move on to the piece I'd like to talk about today, I think it's really relevant to keep in mind how form follows function in poetry. I look at what was there to bring me to delight, but to love and be loved, on page 309. And to start off with, in this piece, just like in the stories we read earlier this year, the narrator is very important. Here we know before we even read the first line from the title itself that this is going to be a first-person narrative. And the structure of the title itself is also interesting. It's pretty non-typical to have a title in the form of a question, which sets the tone for the piece. In addition, it also establishes the intimacy of the narrator and gives us a heads up that we're about to witness all of the events and see the other characters in this poem through this biased first-person narrator. And the first line completely echoes this, saying, "I declared and immediately rejected this." So we know from the outset that this is a very eye-centered piece, that the narrator is going to be very intimate, that there's not going to be a lot of distance in between us and the narrator. And this is echoed by when she discusses the other person, the man in this piece. She says he was afraid, so she's giving her interpretations of his feelings. Even though she has dialogue contained in this poem, the other character is never given a direct voice. So she'll say things like, "He used to claim he could hear things like this," or "It frightened him, he said," but she never uses direct quotation. So this reinforces the idea that this narrator is very close to the reader, but perhaps biased in terms of describing any of the other events. This piece, even though it begins describing the man and his relationships and treatment of women, is therefore kind of completely controlled by the narrator. And so the emotional arc follows her rather than the man. And when you reach the end of the piece, you realize that, in fact, the whole thing is a flashback, which really fits how she's chosen to tell it. It's a little bit like one human hand and the way it unfolds itself, and you don't really realize where it's going until you reach the end of it, and then you have to go back and read it again, and it brings completely new meaning to what has been said, which I think is wonderful in the form of a poem to be able to do that. I think, for me personally, that's the kind of poetry that I enjoy the best. In terms of word choice, obviously, because this is a poem, the sounds of the words are incredibly important. And Paisley Rickdale does a really good job of creating tension by contrasting the sounds of her words. On page 309, she says, "The sight of a woman's slight hips as she was knocked over a television." So that the dissonance between that soft S, the sight of a woman's slight hips, and that softness and kind of innocence and vulnerability is directly contrasted with the harsh knocked, the sound of a television. So that creates a tension of its own that reinforces the point that she's making. Later on, she says, "He used to claim he could hear things like this, not the scratch of a woman's back on a wall, but actual bone rubbing muscle, skin, joint, the sound as if sticks rattled in cloth." So she uses the bone rubbing, and she has a slight repetition of that sound, and then she moves on to completely discordant sounds, skin, joint. And that She uses a short sentence structure and varied sounds to create this really uneasy, discordant rattle that she's describing. So she's literally using the sounds of her words to emphasize what she's saying with her point. She also uses really unusual pairings, which I think is a trademark of good poetry. On page 310, she has this whole bit in the second stanza. It says, "What does it take for the monstrous to be delightful in the eye of God? As if beauty itself wasn't also obscene. A hand really fleshed claw, a peony a flowering of blood." So she takes this monstrous and delightful, and she's contrasting them directly. A hand fleshed claw, a flowering of blood, describing this beautiful flower. And so the tension in her piece, this is the arc of her emotional arc in the piece itself. And the tension is increased in the climax of this arc by these contradictions of terms. She says, one sentence later, "The source of the river, not its ocean grasp." So she's really contrasting these words themselves. And again, she's still using her awareness of how words sound. A flowering of blood is a softer image than a claw, which she's using to describe the hand. So she's contrasting the sound still here. And within her poem itself is an underlying awareness of the power of her words. And you can tell that the narrator is consciously using this word choice and playing with her words. She says it straight out for the reader. "To name a thing is to make it so. When I called this man a man, you must believe he became one for me." So she's drawing the reader's attention that to the fact that she's using these words consciously, and she's literally creating a kind of 3D effect by using her voice and the voice of the reader to express these concepts. And the power of words, she's also very aware of the power of words and self-conscious of them. In fact, she repeats it twice when she says, "And all I could think of was more. Let my thighs be another casing for you. If this is the kind of grave you want, I almost thought grace." And then she repeats almost that exact same phrase at the very end of the poem. "You are my source of delight, an internal search for grace," I answered. "I almost said the grave." So in this, we can see that the narrator is very conscious of the effect of the sounds of words and word choice, and that naming a thing and using a word has incredible power.